Follow along in your Bibles. We'll be in the book of Psalms in just a moment. Psalm chapter 51, and we'll read quite a few verses there in just a second. Psalm 51, invite you to follow along there. And as you're turning there, thank you, like we say every week, thank you for being here. Several of our own members, but we do have some visitors with us, and we're thankful that all of us could be here together. We could brave the rainy weather, and it looks like I was talking with Dwight before. I said, temperatures are starting to warm up. He goes, well, we're not out of the woods yet. But, you know, anything above freezing is warm compared to what we've had this winter. So, but we're getting there. And so it's good to see so many of us out this morning. On the back table, as promised, there are slides for the upstairs Bible class we have going on here. And so those are available for you. There's a packet of everything we've gone over thus far. Again, they're also on the website. Brandon took some time and put them on the website. So if you go onto our website and you look for the audio of all the classes, there's a PDF version. You can download it to your phone, your tablets, computers, and save them. You can have all those there as well. But there are some paper versions in the back for you. When Brooke and I moved into our house over here on Pryor, it had something that I thought was really cool because my grandpa always had one at his house. And I remember going to his house growing up and looking at all the fish in the pond, but it has a pond in the backyard. Of course, the boys were so excited. There were no fish in it at the time, but we put some in there now. And it's so beautiful to look at. One of my favorite things to do when the weather warms up, it has a little waterfall. You get to turn that waterfall on, and it just runs in the morning, and there's birds that come play in the waterfall. And it's so beautiful. And I'm new to the whole pond thing. I've never had to take care of a pond before. I always went to Grandpa's house and got to look at and feed the fish, but never had to take care of it. Well, I went out one day, and it was just cloudy green, where I used to be able to look down to the very bottom and see all the fish. I couldn't see any of the fish. I told Brooke, I said, something is wrong, and when something is wrong, it typically means we're going to have to pay for something, and I don't want to have to do that. And so I immediately call, Jacob Black, Hillary's husband, and his brother take care of the pond. They do that for a living. And so I called Jacob and his brother Todd immediately. I said, what's wrong? What did I do to this pond? He said, Kevin, have you emptied the filter basket? It catches all the leaves. I said, yes, I empty that once a week, just like you said. He goes, well, there's some filters in the waterfall. Have you cleaned those? I said, no. He goes, how long has it been? I said, probably since we moved in. And it's been months. He goes, take those out. He explained to me how to take those out and how to clean them. Well, I take them out. One is black and one is white. At least that's what they were supposed to be. I had two black filters, if you catch my drift here. The white had become so dirty that all the water filtering through the waterfall was just running through those dirty filters. And there was so much mud and gunk and everything that had built up over the last several months that it had just made the water all cloudy and green and gross. And so I took those out and I sprayed them off. I had to spray off all the gunk, and eventually it turned white again, thankfully. I put them back in, and after about a day or so, once the system ran through again, the water was perfectly fine. I could see the fish again. We could go enjoy it. Now I know that those filters need to be cleaned once a month. You know, there is something that we have, and sometimes it gets dirty. And it might get dirty without us even realizing it. We always say, you know, maybe a parent, you've said this to a kid, you use the filter, turn the filter on. And typically it means watch what comes out of your mouth. But before something comes out of our mouth, to me, if I'm using the analogy of that pond in my backyard, what comes out of our mouth, that's just the water that's kind of murky and green. But really where the problem is the filter. The filter has become dirty, and what that filter is, before we think it, we feel it here. That our hearts are the filter of everything we say and everything that we do. And maybe without even realizing it, just through different circumstances or different sins or just the temptations that are out there in the world, our filter, our hearts, they slowly start to become dirtier. And so our thoughts might be filled with things that are impure. Then our words and our actions. But it all stems back to the filter. And when the filter becomes dirty, it needs to be cleaned. We're going to read Psalm 51 in just a moment, but before we do, I want to reference, because this psalm was written for a very specific purpose. And if you notice at the very top of Psalm 51, it says, to the chief musician, a psalm of David. So it's a psalm of David, but not all the psalms of David do we know when and why it was written. But it tells us here, this is a psalm of David when Nathan the prophet went to him after he had gone into Bathsheba. This was after the great sins that we talk about in David's life. When you think back to those moments in his life, do you think as he went on the rooftop and he saw Bathsheba bathing, that he knew what was going to transpire over the next several hours and several days? Do you think that David knew when he saw Bathsheba bathing on the roof what his life would be like from that point on? But he saw her bathing there, and he called for his servants, and he said, bring me that woman. Bring her to me. They even tried to warn him. He almost had a secondary filter, where his men tried to say, you know who that is, right? That's Uriah's wife. Bring her to me. Committed adultery with her. Maybe thought it all went away until she became pregnant. And when she was pregnant, he had to find a way, because her husband has been off at war. And it won't take long before people start putting two and two together that it wasn't too long ago David called for her to come into his quarters. And so we need to come up with a plan. And that plan is, let me call her husband home from war. Let me set up this little staged event, and I'll send him home so that he can have relations with his wife, and it would make it look like it's his baby. And when that didn't work, because he wouldn't go into his wife while his men were fighting out in the fields, we had to come up with a new plan, and that plan was just kill her husband. If I kill her husband, and I make it look like an accident, and I put him on the front lines of war and have him die in war, I technically didn't kill him. And then I can have her be my wife, and then it's normal for a husband and wife to have a baby. He had it all figured out. And that's exactly what happened. Uriah was sent to the front lines. He was killed. He takes Bathsheba as his wife. They have the baby. But that was not the end of the story. Because you see in 2 Samuel chapter 12, after all this happened in chapter 11, in 2 Samuel 12, God sent the prophet Nathan that we just read at the very beginning of Psalm 51. And Nathan calls David out on his sin. He says, you are the one that committed this great sin. And because of it, his house and his kingdom would be divided. It would be taken away from him. The son that was conceived and born to David would die as a consequence for this great sin. And I want you just to think of these several months that David saw Bathsheba bathing on the roof, to where he had to witness that son that was conceived die. He was just a shell of himself. You look at what David had to go through in those times. And David was just, he was empty. He was a shell of what he used to be. He was worried all the time. He was paranoid. That the servants who had to tell him that Uriah had died, they were scared to do so. The text tells us, I don't want to tell him. He might be angry with us. He was short-tempered. He was angry. He was just empty. He wasn't who he used to be. Think of who David was before. When David was rising through the ranks, he was the one that he slayed giants. He killed Goliath. Saul killed his thousands. David killed his 10,000s. He was a hero in the land of Israel. He honored God and honored God's people. He was someone that people would look up to. He was the great and mighty King David. But yet now, he was just the shell of that. He had sinned, and he had sinned greatly. We know the sins. We just went over a lot of them. You have adultery. You have deceit. You have murder. You have lies. You have, I mean, David committed some of the greatest in our minds as we rank sins. I know that's not what we're supposed to do, but in our minds as we rank them, David committed some of the worst of them. It's not the David we know or we knew from earlier on. He was wrapped up in all these circles of lies and deceit. Can you imagine trying to keep all of his lies straight, that he had slept with a woman and tried to hide it, and then he had tried to call someone home so that he could sleep with his wife and it wouldn't happen, and so now I have to come up with this plan and this plan, and it just became lie after lie after lie and deceit after deceit. It's not the David that we want. He was angry. He was paranoid. Who's going to find out? If someone finds out, I'm done for as king, and so I have to kill him. Can you imagine being at the moment in life where your only way to hide a lie and sin was to have someone murdered? Can you imagine being at that point? We wouldn't dream of it. At least I hope you wouldn't dream of it. One of your most trusted soldiers, one of your mighty men, you would have him killed just to keep the lie and deceit going. That's not the David that we know. He was filled with guilt. His one saving grace, I believe, is that he felt guilty. There's nothing wrong with feeling guilty. I think that's what led him to what we're about to read in Psalm 51. But I remember in 2 Samuel chapter 12, as God struck the child with sickness. It says there were 7 days, 7 days where that child was sick. And David wouldn't eat a thing. I can't imagine those 7 days where Nathan had given him the judgments from God for what David had done. And all David could do was just sit and wait, knowing and probably replaying in his mind over and over and over again the sins which he committed, the lies that he told, the deceit that he had laid upon all these people. And now his child, his newborn child, was going to suffer for it. And for 7 days was sick. And people said they tried to bring David food and he wouldn't eat of it. He was feeling guilty. Have you ever had that pit in the bottom of your stomach? You're not hungry. You can't eat. You're worried. You're stressed. It takes a physical toll on you. It takes an emotional, it takes a mental toll on you. We see that in David, all because of one decision he made when he was tempted by a woman bathing on a roof. That's not the David we know. But yet, he was able to say these words. After Nathan came to him and he realized what he had done against the Lord. Remember, that was David's response in 2 Samuel chapter 12 when Nathan told him all these great sins. He says, I have sinned against the Lord. And this is what he's able to say. Have mercy upon me, O God, according to your loving kindness, according to the multitude of your tender mercies, blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from my iniquity. Cleanse me from my sin. For I acknowledge my transgressions, and my sin is always before me. Against you, you only, have I sinned and done this evil in your sight, that you may be found just when you speak and blameless when you judge. Behold, I was brought forth in iniquity, and in sin my mother conceived me. Behold, you desire truth in the inward parts, and in the hidden part you will make me to know wisdom. Purge me with hyssop, and I shall be clean. Wash me, I shall be whiter than snow. Make me hear joy and gladness, that the bones you have broken may rejoice. Hide your face from my sins, and blot out all my iniquities. He's able to come to God. And when you really look at these first 9 verses here, he's asking for one thing: forgiveness. God, I need forgiveness. Blot out my transgressions. Remember them no more. Have mercy on me. Wash me thoroughly. Cleanse me from my sin, he says. I acknowledge my transgressions. My sin is always before me. I'm always going to remember what I did, Lord, but I need you to forget it. I need you to forgive me of this evil that I have done in your sight. I have sinned against you and you only, God. And so he says, purge me with hyssop so I can be clean. Wash me and I will be whiter than snow. Make me hear the joy and gladness. Hide your face from my sins and blot out my iniquities. David wanted forgiveness. Isn't that why we come to God? Don't we come to God because when we do wrong, we need his help? We need to be forgiven. We need God to blot out our transgressions. We talk about, and that's why what Dwight talked about before we partook of this Lord's Supper. That's what Jesus did for us, and we're so thankful for that. That Jesus put himself on the cross as the one and true sacrifice to blot out our sins, to take away those sins, so we can have hope and eternal life. But David didn't stop at just forgiveness of sins. David didn't say, hey, forgive me of my sins, God. I messed up bad. I did some horrible things. I need you to forgive me. But he asked one more thing in verse 10. That's when we get this great verse where he says, create in me a pure heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me. See, forgiveness was one thing. Forgiveness, God can take care of. But David knew that to continue on was going to take more than just God's forgiveness. It was going to take change within David himself. God, blot out my transgressions. Forgive me. Make me whiter than snow. But also create in me. Give me a pure heart. Some of your versions will say, clean. Give me a clean heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit. Help me be steadfast. Help me want to do what's right. Help keep me straight. Help keep me going in the right direction. Create in me a pure heart. See what happened through the course of what David had to go through. Maybe without even realizing it, he probably didn't even know how far he fell. But his filter had gotten dirty. It had gotten all stopped up with all the gunk that this world has to throw at it. And he realized now that God was the only one that could take that filter, spray it off, clean it, and make it pure. Create in me a pure heart, O God, and help me stay steadfast. Forgiveness was one thing, but David wanted change. He wanted to get back to the David that was. David didn't want his heart to be stained with sin. And so he asked God to do something about it. Now I want us to think about ourselves for a minute. Sometimes it feels like you and I are running on empty. Just like David. David was empty. He was done. Life is hard. Life is difficult. There are physical problems, physical sicknesses that weigh us down. There are family problems. Sometimes your marriage might not be what it should be. The honeymoon phase is over. The kids are gone. Where are we left now? Sometimes there's problems with children. Children aren't obeying the Lord the way they should. Children, maybe they obey the Lord, but maybe they just are going through some changes themselves. They're questioning things. Maybe questioning the authority in the house. There's emotional stresses that go along with all these things, all these physical stresses. There's spiritual problems. Maybe it's economical. Maybe you're struggling. There's so many different areas that we struggle in. And unfortunately, those areas oftentimes lead us to forget. Because I feel like it's when we're at our weakest that Satan is at his strongest. We reference that verse all the time that Satan is prowling around like a lion, seeking whom he may devour. Did you know that a lion out in the wilderness, it doesn't care if you're the strongest or the weakest. It just goes after what he can get. And sometimes it's the weakest one. It's that old saying, you know, if you're running away from a bear, I don't have to outrun the bear, I just have to outrun you. Well, that's who Satan gets. Sometimes I feel like it's when we're at our weakest that Satan is there to pounce. And sometimes in the midst of all those problems, the physical and the emotional stresses, sometimes in the midst of all those physical and emotional stresses that we have in life, it will lead us to forget about our spiritual life. And when we forget about God, that's when sin will find a way in. Isn't that what we see in David? He had one brief moment of a lapse in judgment, and sin found a way in. And when that one sin found its way in the door, and it just kept coming and coming and coming and coming. And sometimes it feels like we try so hard, but we're just running on empty. Maybe you're trying to cover up the sins of the past. Maybe you're currently living in sin and you're open about it, but you just don't know how to get out. Maybe you're being tempted and you find yourself slowly working down towards the empty. You know it's not where we should be. There are so many people struggling in this world, probably even in this congregation, for different reasons and various reasons. But know one thing. Just as David wrote in Psalm 51, we have a God who will not only forgive, but create in us a clean and pure heart. This morning, here's what I want all of us to do. I want all of us to ask God that simple thing that David asked. Create in me a pure heart, O God, that I may be steadfast. Create in me a pure heart. That idea of pure. We talk about that idea of what it means to be pure when we talk about gold and diamonds and typically fine jewels. But that idea of it's unmixed with anything else. That the idea of being pure means that you're free from dirt and debris. There's no weakness found in it. And that's what David was asking God. Create in me a pure heart. I don't want this heart to be mixed with anything else in this world. That if this is my filter, I want it to be clean. I don't want the gunk and the dirt and the dust that this world has to throw at me. I don't want the sins and the temptations. I want them taken away. I want a pure and clean heart. And this morning, I want us just to think of all the areas. Now, not every single one of these will apply to you as we finish this sermon, but some will. I want us to think of all the areas where I can ask God to give me a pure heart, a clean heart. First and foremost, I don't think the font I used on my computer came through, so just bear with it. That's okay. Create in me a pure heart for God. Of course, that's our number one goal. To kind of get back to God. Isn't that what David was saying? That he had sinned against the Lord. That when all those sins were brought to light, how can he say that? When he had sinned against Bathsheba and against Uriah and against all these other people that he had put in harm's way, how could he say that he had sinned against the Lord and the Lord only? That's because at the end of the day, all these sins separated him from the one true God. And sometimes we need a reminder just to take a step back and say, God, create in me a heart for you that wants to serve you, to do your will, to do what's right. And all these other things should hopefully fall into place when first and foremost we can have a pure heart for God. Maybe you're here this morning and you need to say, I need to have a pure heart for my spouse. The Bible tells us we have commands that as husbands and wives, we are supposed to love each other as Christ loved the church, to respect and honor one another. Most likely on your wedding day, you took vows promises, covenants, to do just that. To love, to honor, to cherish, to uphold. Sometimes when life happens, those promises aren't kept. Sometimes when kids happen, kids take precedence. And sometimes when jobs happen, jobs take precedence. And sometimes when economic troubles come, it just puts a strain and a stress. Or when kids aren't faithful, there's a strain and a stress that wasn't there before. But God tells us, just like we read in Ephesians chapter 5, that Jesus loved this church, that He was willing to give His life for it, to serve, to cherish and uphold this church, His people. Sometimes we need to just ask God, create in me a pure heart for my spouse. Help me to love her the way Christ loved the church. Help me to respect and honor Him the way Christ has respected and honored us. Help us have a clean heart for my spouse, to love, to cherish, to uphold, to get them to heaven, to help each other in every walk of life. Maybe we need to say, and this is for us as parents, this is why I'm saying the font didn't come through the way I wanted, but that's okay. Create in me a pure heart for my children. The hardest job I think anyone can ever have is being a parent. It's difficult. I'm only 5 years in. It's difficult. Some of you know that from years of experience. They test patience. They test your nerves. Sometimes you feel like you just need a little break. Sometimes I know how difficult it is to get out on a Sunday morning, to sit in these pews, to listen to guy talk for who knows how long. They get a little restless. Parents, sometimes you don't get anything out of it. We leave upset. We leave. Just need a break. But God tells us to love those children, to teach them, to bring them up in the fear and admonition of the Lord. And sometimes we just need to ask God to renew our spirit, to create in me a pure heart for my children. Help me to always teach them the way God intended them to be taught. Teach them the way of the Lord. Even as they get up into the teens, I'm not there yet, but I was one. I know how difficult teens can be when they start questioning mom and dad, they start questioning God. Or even maybe as grown adults, but they still need mom and dad. Create in me a clean heart for my children. Let them see a pure heart that's devoted to God. Let them see a pure heart that's devoted to my spouse, so I can teach them the ways of the Lord. Create in me a pure heart for my spiritual, and right below that off the screen, my spiritual family. Create in me a pure heart for my spiritual family. You know, we get together every week, several times a week, some of us. And I'm so thankful for this church family because I feel like we get along. I've been to some churches where that's not necessarily the case. But even sometimes in families, what happens? Well, in families, arguments might break out. We might not be as close to other people as we are to others. We might have some disagreements. And maybe you're here today, and I hope it's not the case, but maybe there's someone in this audience who you might not necessarily get along with or like all that well. But what we are is a family. That when we believe in God and we believe in Christ, we become part of His family. We become heirs and children of God, the Scriptures tell us. And sometimes we just need to take that step and ask God, create in me a pure heart for my church family. Help me to love every member. Help me to not only love God, but to love others the way that Jesus told us we need to. Help me to serve my church family like we talked about all last year. Help me to cherish them because we all want to be in heaven together. Isn't that our goal? To use each other, to help each other, encourage each other to be in heaven. And lastly, as we close this morning, create in me a pure heart for others. Now that could go into a lot of what we've already talked about, but there is a world out there that's not your spouse, that's not your children, and that's not your spiritual family. There is a world out there that has impure hearts. There's a world out there that wants nothing to do with God, that wants nothing to do with what you and I are doing here today, that wants nothing to do with having a pure heart. And it's very easy when we look at people who are different than us, whether it's religiously or economically or politically or socially, whatever it is, it's very easy to have those thoughts in our filter that might not be so pure. But if you look on the front of your bulletin this morning, there's a story of the Good Samaritan, where a Samaritan was willing to put all those things behind to love his neighbor, to love others, and to serve. We need a pure heart for everybody, a clean heart for everybody here in this world. We got four fish when we moved into this house. One for Wilson wasn't here yet, so it was the four of us, and we said we all need a fish for this pond. And so we bought four little tiny fish, some goldfish and some koi, and put them in there. And I don't know for sure, but I think the reason we lost one, and we did lose one, was because those filters weren't cleaned on time. And so one of them got a disease, and I think I talked to Brandon a little bit because Brandon has some fish in his backyard, and I said, has yours ever done this? He said, yeah, and there's nothing you could do about it, and so it died. I don't know if my kids are listening. Landon knows, and it was one of the blue ones, and Landon got one of the blue ones, and I got one of the blue ones. And we named them all, and I don't know which one's which, but the boys know, and when we said, you know, Landon, we only have three fish now. One died. He said, well, it wasn't mine. I said, no, it wasn't yours. It was Daddy's. Daddy's fish died. The blue one. Yeah. All because of a dirty filter. Spiritually, when our filters get dirty, when problems happen. That's when disease sets in. That's when sickness comes. That's when we start to question. That's when we start to doubt. But when those filters are clean, when those filters are clean and they're pure, that's when God is in there. And when God is in there, I feel like that's when salvation happens. Because it's clean and holy. He says, do not cast me away from your presence. Do not take your Holy Spirit from me. Restore to me the joy of your salvation, he says, and uphold me by your generous spirit. Then I will teach transgressors your way, and sinners shall be converted to you. He says, create in me a clean heart, a pure heart, O Lord. Restore to me the joy of your salvation, and I will teach transgressors your way. Are you ready to restore that joy? Maybe you are here this morning, and you feel like that filter, that heart has become clogged and dirty. And it's time to ask God to restore in you a steadfast spirit, to create in you a clean and pure heart. You want to make that happen this morning? I think for some of us, it can happen right where you're sitting. You know, we normally stand during this song, but if you need to sit and just say a quick prayer, I don't think anyone would judge you for that. And ask God to forgive. Ask God, just like David did, to create in you a clean heart. Do you need us to pray with you? You can come up and we'll pray together as a congregation. Ask God to forgive you and create that clean heart in you. But maybe you've never given your heart to God. You've never given your life to Him, and you need to be buried in the waters of baptism. Have those sins washed away, just like David said in the very beginning of that psalm, to have those transgressions done away with, and then have your heart clean. We could do that for you this morning, because the Lord has invited you to come to Him. Do you need to come to Him now? You can come forward as we stand and as we sing.